Hello and welcome to Two Old Guys on the Back Porch. I am Steve Scotch, and we have the lovely and talented Kat. That's C-A-T, singing her heart out. Kat, what's going on?
Hey, how y'all doing? We can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many other podcast platforms like Audible or Amazon Music. Today, we're going to shout out a couple of cities in the U.S. that are be listening to us. One is Syracuse, New York. Syracuse, New York is named after an ancient Greek city of Syracuse, Sicily, because it's of its familiar natural features. It's also the economic and educational hub of central New York State. Our other town is Junction City, Kansas. Junction City, Kansas is the first town west of the Mississippi to distribute Coca-Cola. It's also the first town in Kansas to have a kindergarten back in 1927. Wow. Giving y'all a round of applause.
All right, alcohol is a definite here on the back porch. What is it about a beautiful sunny afternoon here on the back porch with the birds singing and the leaves rustling in the breeze that makes me want to make a drink? Don't question it. Just do it. I did it, and I made a Manhattan. You know, I love it. I do make a mean Manhattan. Kat, what you got?
I have one of my seasonal favorites here, a caramel appletini, which usually has caramel vodka, a little butterscotch schnapps, apple cider, and it goes down quite well.
Is it still apple season here in the Commonwealth?
I feel it is apple season.
All right. Sounds sweet like you, babe. Today.
Thanks, doll.
We're going to look at the some stories we've heard recently about government corruption, not on a large scale. We already know the governors, senators, and the House dudes and women are on the take. We won't get into them. These are just some stories we've heard kind of like on your local level, elected officials.
Like a county commissioner or something.
Some elected, some hired city, county officials who have taken our taxpayer money and used it and abused it in ways you can't imagine. And we'll go ahead and do a little disclaimer here. Here on the back porch, we're not getting into politics. These people, these little stories we're telling, we don't care.
Even though this is going to be the Thursday after Election Day, we're not going to
go there.
We
don't care if these people are Republican, Democrat, whatever. You know, these are just criminals. Blue or red, we don't care. All right, first up was this story I heard about the super mayor from the village of Dolton, spelled D-O-L-T-O-N. Dolton is it's in Illinois, just south of Chi-Town, Chicago. This lady, Tiffany Henyard, who proclaimed herself super mayor, she's in a world of trouble right now. Dolton, Illinois, had $8 million in the bank when she got there in 2021. And now they're down to $3.5 million in the hole. That's right. Under the helm of Super Mayor Tiffany Henyard.
That is some shopping trip.
The village of Dolton. They still call it a village.
Village, well.
Other states still do that? We don't have to.
Our town is considered a village because it's not a town.
So. All right. Not only did Tiffany smoke through $8 million, but then took it and put them in the hole. $3.5 million. Look this chick up on the web, Tiffany Henyard. But I do warn you, she's hard to look at. Now, where did all the money go?
She didn't spend nothing on beauty treatments.
Now, did the money go to paving roads? Though she did sign off to have her mother's driveway paved for $500,000. Now, I know a little bit about asphalt.
That's
and a lesser, unless her mom's driveway was 5 miles long, there's no way her mom's driveway cost...
Or as the gypsies call it, black gold.
Okay. Miss Supermayor in Dalton, Illinois, the investigators are still tracing the paper trail to find out where all the money went. They have found out that Tiffany liked to click the mouse on Amazon. She spent $33,000 in one day on Amazon.
Hashtag goals.
Maybe it was prom day. she dropped 85 grand on a party. This was the one that kind of blew it up and got out there. $85,000 she spent of the taxpayers' money on a party, complete with a rapper and R&B singer that no one had ever heard of.
It was for community development or just party to have a party.
She's a big fan of designer handbags.
Girl.
Wonder if she's got any Michael Kors. Believe it or not, her boyfriend, who is about as ugly as she is, he's got a brand new luxury sled that he's driving around in. And he works for who? You guessed it. The Dalton Police Force, where a few officers have made bank in overtime hours under Tiffany Hinyard's reign. The village of Dalton has paid for her nails, her hairdos, her makeup.
And she still don't look good.
They got receipts. They got paperwork on some of this shit. Walgreens, Target, Walmart. You knew Walmart was going to make a showing. Wayfair, Best Buy, all of it at Dalton, Illinois' expense. I mean, you can't make this shit up. This is going to be a Lifetime movie. It's in the making. It's going to happen. Tiffany Hinyard just announced she's running for re-election. I think she meant to say she's on the run. Tiffany Hinyard is just one of the many elected or hired officials in a town near you that are taking the taxpayers' money and putting it in a shoebox under their bed. I just don't understand how someone can think that taking money from hardworking citizens is an okay thing to do. I mean, you got to be a little screwed up in the head to do that. Here's another a-hole who thought he was smarter than the system. And actually, it's two Einsteins involved in this one. Right here at City Hall in the city of Richmond, about 25 minutes east of this back porch, we got the general registrar and his deputy, Keith Ballmer and Jerry Richardson. They used the city's credit card like it was their own. Ballmer contracted his wife to do disability training at a cost of $2,300. He put a pool table and new furniture in the office down there. He bought thousands of dollars worth of artwork, used the city vehicle as his own vehicle, receipts for hotels, dinner, you name it. He also fired a couple whistleblowers. There was a couple people in the office that said something stinks about this guy. So they tried to, you know, put it out there, and magically they got fired. Now, here's a word that Ballmer and Richardson had never heard of, and the word is nepotism. Kat, do you know what that means?
Yes, it's hiring your friends and relatives.
Favoritism shown to family members in business or politics. This Richmond registrar which I don't know what that is, election registrar.
It's the person you register your vote with, and you take their registration to be able to vote.
They're supposed to oversee all aspects of the voting, election, and all that, right?
Right.
They're supposed to be trusted.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, we went and voted early, and we thought that they went smooth as silk. Got in and got out.
So, Keith Ballmer, the election registrar down there in Richmond, he hired his brother, his brother's roommate. Why not? The deputy registrar, he took it a step further and brought in his grandson and his grandson's girlfriend. Check this.
And this is not the first time the city of Richmond has nepotism issues.
We've had problems here. The grandson's girlfriend's cousin. You have to write that down, right? You can't. What was it? The grandson's there. And now we got the grandson's girlfriend. And then she said, hey, I got a cousin. and now they're in there.
She need a check.
It's hard to keep up with. Now, the deputy registrar has not done. That's right. He wasn't done. Then he brought in the granddaughter. Okay. And I'm sure all these people were highly qualified for the position.
I don't think anybody was checking the resume.
Here's what I don't get. The Richmond election registrar ordered $750,000 worth of tabulation units, which are, I don't know. I guess you need those to count the votes. Right. Tabulation units like take a bunch of data and concise it down to
right
a little. But the problem was he didn't get it approved by the Richmond Procurement Office. And so when they came at him, when they got the bill, he said he signed the invoice by accident.
Usually, especially when the business that we're in, the city of Richmond, you have to, every bolt, everything.
Right.
Everything has to be calculated. If we do a job for them, everything needs to be calculated perfectly.
That's exactly right. Procurement office for any municipality, they're there for your town, county, or city to monitor spending.
Right.
To make sure the goods and services are worth what we're spending on. I don't understand how these people get away with it. So how does an elected or hired official working for us continue to rob the cookie jar? I mean, these stories, they're everywhere. It's probably happened somewhere where you live. Again, why bring up the bad news? It's simple. If you only knew who was in charge of your tax dollars, you'd lose it. I mean, people spending money that's not theirs, it doesn't just happen in government offices. These stories are popping up about someone all the time. Right, Kat? Like the treasurer at the church.
Right.
The treasurer at the Little League.
We had a treasurer at a church down the road. She got, $600,000? And it was not a big church there in Louise. It was a little dinky church. But nobody was looking what Orlene was doing with the money.
It's crazy. Just helping themselves and taking what they want. And I'm going to try to get inside the head of one of these cuckoos. I think in the beginning, these people go, you know, my car is about to peace out. It's making a funny noise. I'll just take $32,000 out of the building fund at church, and then I'll pay it back.
I mean, we've got Eric Adams, the mayor of the city of New York. Was taking money from the government of Turkey.
I left him out, but he almost made the list. I didn't want to drag it out. Like I said, I think they take some from the beginning.
Oh, they won't miss that.
And then they go, you know what? I need a new coat. And they don't go to TJ Maxx. They go to Macy's. And they get a nice coat.
I need a nice coat.
And then the stealing, it just kind of gets out of control, right? I just don't understand how someone can get it in their head to take money that's not theirs, especially when it affects like a whole town or organization. It's really crazy. Most of this corruption.
Oh, the other one was baseball. Baseball leagues have women that are constantly
Little leagues, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, all of it. It's crazy.
I'll just skim a little bit off the top, and they don't stop skimming.
And again, most of the corruption, it just kind of fades away because, you know, somebody working for, to say the mayor working at City Hall, they're working in a department that processes contracts and big stuff. They're not working alone. I mean, when a city or county discovers one of their own stealing shit, it's easier to sweep it under the rug, right? Because upon further investigation, they find out the whole freaking office is in on this shit. So it's not pretty, but it's true. Hopefully where you live, you know, everybody's on the up and up. All right, let's roll right into One Tough Son of a Bitch. Ooh, Walt Whitman, born in 1819 from Huntington, New York. Walter Whitman Jr. was the first great American poet. At least he thought so. Very conceited was Walt. He frequently went outside the lines of poetic form, right? No regular meter or rhyme to his work. Often labeled as free verse, Whitman often wrote about death, loss, healing, sexuality. I read some of it. There's some weird shit in there. Walt was the second of 9 kids, quit school at 11 to help his family that was struggling money-wise, had a couple jobs, and then he ended up at a printing company, and that kind of got it started, right?
Yeah.
As far as writing
and
all that, started submitting freelance fiction and poetry to different newspapers, magazines. In 1955, Walt Whitman published his own book of poetry called Leaves of Grass, which Walt would write, rewrite, and expand on Leaves of Grass throughout his life.
And he would be his own hype man. He would go out and review his own book, but of course be anonymously and say, great byline, American Bard at last, transcendent, the most beautiful poetry ever written in America. You know, but he was hyping him. He was his own PR team.
Right. The first edition of the Leaves of Grass, it was just a small book of 12 poems. And remember, this was the 1950s.
1850s.
I mean, I'm sorry, 1850s, you're right. And Walt, he added a little spice to his poetry. And people kind of took notice of the sexual imagery, right, in his writing. And he kind of paid the price for it. Did Walt Whitman care? He did not.
Well, he believed that the unpopular belief that homosexual is natural, which for 1850 was not exactly kosher.
Right. He was very outspoken about, as Kat said, politics, Civil War, slavery.
He did contribute to the Civil War. He was kind of a missionary. He visited Virginia and Washington, D.C., and tried to help some of the soldiers that were in hospitals and stuff.
Dude lived a wild life. He did. You know, who cares if he was gay or not? I don't care. He had several relationships with several men, and it's still argued today whether or not he was gay, but he was definitely gay. I read his poetry.
He liked to be nude. He would just walk around the house completely nude, completely naked, and
When he was younger, he wasn't that bad. When he got older, he was just an old, ugly dude.
Right.
But
he
anyway.
Said, nature is naked, and I was also.
Yes. I'm going to say Leaves of Grass is regarded as one of the most important works of American poetry ever. Am I right?
I would concur, yes.
There's roads, schools, bridges named after this dude. There's a crater on Mercury. It's got his name on it. Hell, dude's got a rest stop with the Walt Whitman. I got to take a leak. This dude did like to drink, right?
He liked to work out. He called it manly training. He would do brisk walks, dancing, frequently bathing cure for ills, ward off depression. He was into being, you know, like gay, some gay
guys. You know,
guys,
the weird thing is I heard of Walt Whitman. I didn't know who the hell he was. And then I looked on, I think there might be some videos where he would go and read his poetry in these little, I don't know, we call coffee houses or some shit,
right,
way back in the day when that was popular. Mm-hmm. And he was up there tanked. I mean, just ripped and just, but it's legendary.
He was the Charles Bukowski of his time.
Right. I don't know. Maybe I made that part up. All right. Anyway, Walt Whitman. He's in the New Jersey Hall of Fame. Didn't know they had one.
Jersey boy.
He was inducted into the Legacy Walk, which is, it's an outdoor public display that celebrates LGBT history and its people. And that makes Walt Whitman one tough son of a bitch. Are we watching stuff?
We're watching, and I got to watch a young actress that you and I like. It is her first directing debut there, and it was on Netflix. It's called Woman of the Hour. It was directed by Anna Kendrick. You know her from Perfect Pitch. And
she's directing now?
She directed this. It was pretty good. It was written by Ian McDonald, and it's based on the true story of serial killer Donnie Akala. In his 1978 appearance there on The Dating Game amidst his murder spree.
Oh, God.
Kendrick plays the game show contestant Cheryl Bradshaw, who's sitting there asking questions to the three. They're used to, kids, there used to be a game show called The Dating Game. You wouldn't see what the person looked like on the other side of the wall. But you would sit there and ask questions and decide which of the three guys that you think, you know, and the questions are always a little provocative, you know, what flavor, and it was not like what flavor of ice cream, you know, and Anna Kendrick decides while she's doing this, the character decides that she's going to change some of the questions to be a little more provocative, more so than the game show asked for. And at the end of this, she does end up picking Rodney Akala, the serial killer.
Wow.
But she doesn't end up, she, you know, starts getting, in the true story, she got really bad vibes and decided, nah, I'm not going to go anywhere with this guy. And kind of, you know, doesn't go on the proposed date at the end. But what's interesting is while, of course, that's the main part of the story here, you're kind of seeing some of the unfortunate murders that he does all over the United States. You know, he kills a woman in Wyoming who's pregnant. He kills another woman in New York.
When was that?
It's the 1970s. And the only thing that's a little disconcerting, you're kind of going back and forth between 78, 77, 79, 71, you know, when he's doing this spree. And, you know, they even had one girl who was there at the taping of the Dating Game show and said, I think that's the guy who killed my friend.
Wow.
That had been killed there in Malibu.
And wonder why Anna went and picked that story.
I read an interview and she thought it was an interesting dichotomy. He was kind of like, who's the guy in that killed in Seattle? Anyway, the really good looking guy. And then he just looks really normal, but all this other shit's going on in the background.
Right.
You know. And I thought, and watching the deaths were really, really hard because you saw how vulnerable these women, you know, can we go, he's a photographer. So can we go take pictures? So they're alone with him and their presumption, we're just going to take some cool pictures for his portfolio and help this guy out. End up being murdered. I mean, raped and murdered. So it's interesting. And it, there was one person that he raped her. It was a runaway, teenage runaway. He rapes her. And then she kind of talks, oh, I'm so sorry. We had to do this, please. And she kind of gets off and they go to a gas station. Well, he ends up getting arrested in the gas station while she's in the bathroom.
Wow.
It's really a good, I mean.
Because you know it really happened.
It's true.
And it's brutal.
It's totally brutal.
Predators are, you know.
It's awful and it's awful to watch, but you realize that it happens. And they're thinking that he may have killed upwards to 130 women over these years.
When you hear about these weirdos, they never know how many people they actually took out.
No. And Anna, I don't know if you're ever going to hear this podcast, but I think you did a great job, girl. Great, good job. Both
She's
acting.
Totally cool. What's it called?
It's called Woman of the Hour.
All right. I need to cheer up after that downtrodden story. What kind of shot we got?
We have Grandma's, as you said, apple season still going.
Oh, shit.
Grandma's apple pie shot. This is one from Tipsy Bartender. One part apple schnapps, one part Goldschlager, one part vanilla vodka. And, you know, I think Tipsy, being Jamaican, puts rum in everything, so...
All right, down the hatch. Woo! Ouch.
Ooh.
What's on the rim? Cinnamon?
It is graham crackers.
Wow, Kat went all out. I'm going to say that's a no for me.
It's a no for you. It's not bad. I think the Goldschlager hits you right at
I
the
agree.
Back of your throat.
But it's not a bad aftertaste.
No, it's not bad. It's different.
Feels like I ate a breakfast bar. I don't know why. And it's called what?
Grandma's apple pie shot.
All right. Give it a shot. Thank you, Kat. All right. Today we were bumpered in with Sierra Farrell, 36 years young from Charleston, West Virginia. To me, you really can't put Sierra Farrell's music in a category. There's some bluegrass in the background, some folk, just old school, deep rooted country to me. Sierra grew up in a busted home, living in a trailer in West Virginia. In her early 20s, drifted around playing street corners here and there, got addicted to drugs. Then somewhere down the road, she decided to get her life in order. And lucky for us, she did. So
and
we
she
get
said
to
one of the main things was leaving West Virginia.
Wow. Now we get to enjoy her great music that she's put out so far. 4 albums. We hope many more. And Sierra Farrell, in case you haven't noticed, she's quite the fashion queen. She kind of makes old school look new school. Like, you young cats don't remember Minnie Pearl.
Oh, well,
but Minnie Pearl will wear these dresses, right? And Sierra has kind of taken those and done her own thing with them.
The only thing missing is probably the price tag that Minnie always left there the hat.
Check out Sierra on Pinterest.
Okay. Her musical journey, childhood, she played clarinet, sang in the choir, grew up in the 90s, including music listening to 10,000 Maniacs, Tracy Chapman.
Ooh.
Said she enjoyed... She joined a Grateful Dead cover band, but left to pursue her own musical goals.
Yep.
And she has said that she, unfortunately, overdosed 5 times.
Wow. Yeah.
And
we're
died.
Lucky she's here.
Right.
It seems like an awesome lady. Talks it, lives it, breathes it. This song we were bumpered in with today is called In Dreams, which is a little old. It was on her 2021 album called Long Time Coming.
If you want to hear her and you're in Australia, January 8th, 2025. She'll be at Broswood Park in Broswood, Australia.
Whoa. Check out the video for In Dreams on YouTube. She got Billy Keane, who's also a pretty great artist, to do the video with her on it. It's pretty cool. Check out Sierra Farrell wherever you get your music. I want to thank everyone for hanging out on the back porch. We'll see y'all down the road.
See ya.